Y'all, if you are a queer parent, and I have a feeling you might be, and you're dreaming of the ultimate family getaway, you have to check this out, y'all. Gays with Kids is hosting their fifth annual LGBTQIA+ Family Spring Break from April 2nd through April 6th, 2026. Mark that on your calendars. It is going to be the perfect mix of fun, community, and a beautiful chance to build real connections with other LGBTQIA families, like mine, because we're going to be there. We're going to be there too, and I want to see you there. This is it going to be 3 nights aboard Royal Caribbean International, cruising through the Bahamas, surrounded by other amazing queer families. If this sounds like your kind of trip, because it does for me, you're going to head to the link in the show notes to grab your spot. Oh, and don't forget to mention that you heard about it from the Queer Family Podcast. And come say hi to me when you're there. Okay, I hope to see you there. Let's get on with this show. Somebody's throwing a party. Guess what? I'm throwing another party, y'all, and this one is happening on Halloween. So you bring your costumes, you bring your kids, you bring your joy, and we are going to meet at Sugar Mouse in NYC. That's on the Lower East Side from 4 to 6 p.m. on Saturday, October 25th. That is the Saturday before Halloween, and it's also after your children's nap time, so everyone can come. There will be games. There might be a little costume party catwalk. There are drinks for the adults, of course. And I will be there with my family. So I hope you all show up. The info's in the show notes. And click the link to RSVP. And I'll see you there. Let's go. Let's have a little fun. We deserve it. We really do. This episode and the entire year of episodes is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank. Use code QUEERFAM25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Make those babies, and then you know what to do. Come tell me about them.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
And one of the advice that we got from our psychologist was meet the children where they are, right? Mm-hmm. So don't sort of overload them. And that's actually worked so far. Mm-hmm. It'll come up in the most random moments. Like you'll be walking down Times Square or Central Park and there'll be a question and then you've got to then capture that moment. And sometimes, you know, we want to be together to share that moment because we want to support them. And sometimes we're alone.
Welcome, y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. I'm Jamie, I'm your gay host, and this is the show that highlights, celebrates, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA families in all of our fabulous identities. And this episode does not disappoint, as they usually don't. I got to sit down with Kevin and Aleem. Kevin and Aleem are a gay couple. They live in New York City, but they are also from Canada. And they had a little surrogacy route and all the things that go with surrogacy. We had a really wonderful discussion about how they made their families. And also, we delve into a good amount about the bio connection versus non-bio connection and what it means for families like ours or what it doesn't mean. And it's a really lovely discussion. You're going to like it. You will. I don't know. You're going to love it. But also, Kevin happens to be, I'm going to read from my script so I don't mess this up. So Kevin happens to be the vice chair of a foundation called the Fertility Friends Foundation. It's a Canadian registered charity that offers grants along with an IVF cycle program to help alleviate the huge costs of IVF, surrogacy, and egg and sperm donation. So it's a really wonderful organization for the LGBTQIA community. So I was so happy to talk to him. And actually, the really cool thing about this episode dropping today is their newest round of applications opened on October 1st. So it's open right now. And you can go in and you can see if you're eligible to maybe possibly get a grant to help you build your family. It's really fantastic. And so make sure you stay for the whole episode so you hear more about the Fertility Friends Foundation. It's a really wonderful thing. And it is Canadian, so I do believe you have to be in Canada, but still a really wonderful resource. So share it with all your Canadian friends, your Canadian friends. Love y'all. I hope you enjoy this episode. And, you know, happy October. Here we come. Halloween. Whoop, whoop. Come to my party. Okay, let's roll this tape. Helen, Beulah, let's roll the tape. Thank you so much.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Kevin and Aleem.
Hi.
Nice to meet you virtually. I feel like we have so much to chat about, so we're going to get right into it. And what you might not know is I do this thing where I have my guests introduce themselves instead of me doing it. And I time you.
We're ready.
On your marks, get set, go.
And I'm Aleem Danji. I am an immigrant from Africa who came to Canada 40 years ago and have been living in so many different countries over the last 20 years. Kevin and I met 21 years ago. We got married 10 years ago. And now we're in New York and we've got two wonderful kids, Ava and Noah, 10 and 8.
Boom. You did it. You are a professional. Look at you. And you got all the countries in and everything. Wow, you've been all over, huh?
It has been a ride for sure.
So you moved to Canada as a kid, I'm imagining, because you can't be that old.
I thank you. We moved when I was six, from the warmest spot in the world to the coldest. I was quite bitter about that, but I do remember that.
You can go visit, I suppose, and get some sun. I don't like the cold at all. I moved from California to here. No, very different kind of move, but still, I miss the heat.
Yeah.
All right. So y'all met 20 years ago?
We actually met 22 years ago. That's We've been true. Together 21 years and married 11, but that's okay.
Wow. I stopped counting, apparently.
I'm the details guy in the relationship.
I have to do, every time somebody asks me, I have to count. I have to do the math and think, okay, well, this person was president at that time, so it was this year. It's very sad. But, you know, you do stop counting after a while because the years just keep going, which is beautiful and amazing.
Yeah.
So how did you meet?
So we met at an airport. We were reading the same book. We were both on our way to Toronto. And funny enough, the title of the book was Losing My Virginity, which is Richard Branson's autobiography.
Oh, never read that. That's Balky, right?
Balky. Great, really great book. And so that sparked a conversation. At the time, Aleem was in a relationship. So it didn't go on beyond that. We're dating ourselves here, but we exchanged MSN.
Yeah, you did.
Emails, if you remember that.
Yeah, you did. I do.
And about a year later, something that Aleem describes as a thirst trap popped up. You know, when you used to sign on, the little thing would pop in the corner.
Boop, boop.
And I took the bait. By that time, he was single.
And you were too, Kevin?
And I was too, and that was 21 years ago.
Wow. And happily ever after ever since. I just realized as you were talking, Kevin, I didn't get your rundown of who you are. You Canadian? What's your story?
I'm Canadian, born in Switzerland from Canadian expats. I spent my first 18 years living in Europe, in Switzerland. Moved to Toronto for university in 2002. And then with Aleem, we've, you know, lived all over since. But so I have a foot on both sides of the pond. My parents still live in Europe. We try to spend our summers over there. And then life for us has overall been in North America or abroad.
Wow, this is like the global episode. This is amazing. I mean, thinking of like the state of our country right now, like, have you thought of leaving?
Well, we actually are.
Oh my God, really?
We're moving back to Canada in summer of 2026.
Oh, I'm so jealous.
You can come with. We started building a house there just a couple months ago, and it'll take about a year to get done.
That's amazing.
Yeah, we're looking forward to it.
So you're just going to build a wing for me and my family, right? That's what I'm hearing?
It can be done.
We're all going to need a place in Canada the way things are going. Oh, my God. Fingers crossed, knock wood. All right, let's go into your family building journey. So you met 22 years ago and it seems like it was pretty seamless and you guys were like, you know, when you know, you know. How soon, and this is a major question when it comes to l'Égyptois, as I like to call us, family building. How soon after you started dating did you discuss children?
On our first date.
Yeah. Yep, there it is. Because we all do, because we have so many decisions.
I can remember, if anybody's from Toronto, there used to be a Mexican place on Yonge Street called Hernando's Hideaway. And so that was our first meal together. And I can very vividly remember that conversation of, you know, what do you see your future being like? What are you looking for in a relationship? And at the time, gay marriage was not legal yet in Canada. Mm-hmm. we had never really heard of surrogacy. We had no idea how that would happen.
Right.
But it was a conversation that we had already started, knowing that at some point that was something that was important for both of us.
Yep, there it is. We all do. So how did the conversation go? Was it just a quick like, yes, yeah, I want children. Yeah, I want children. Oh, good. We're good. Or did you go more in depth with it, if you recall?
Probably somewhere between like nachos and the fajitas, but
margaritas.
Yeah, lots of margaritas. And I'm 7 years older than Kevin. And so I was a little bit more clear in terms of my non-negotiables. The smoking for me was a non-negotiable, and Kevin was a smoker. So that was discussed right away.
European.
And the fact that we both come from families that we care for and we value that experience that was talked about. I don't think we actually said we want this many kids by then. I think we just said how important family and values are. And at that point, yeah, that was a first date, but we had been chatting a lot online. And I think that when you do that, you start to explore what's important, what's not important. And if you had children, what would be their experience? So it was a little bit more fantasy, exploring what life would be like, as opposed to committing right there and then.
And that's the intentionality that we bring, like from the get-go, right? That's amazing. And so I have to say, your relationship is so similar to mine. We have a 7-year age difference as well. My wife was a smoker, which was a for me, which is, it's just really funny. She doesn't smoke anymore. Just saying.
We won.
Yeah, we won. I usually do.
We don't get everything we wanted. I also wanted chickens. I remember talking about wanting chickens. I got the farm. We did buy a farm.
Of course
you
did.
But I never got my chickens. So that's still on the list.
Well, maybe in Canada.
Maybe.
In Canadia, as I like to call it. Okay, so when did the actual, like, when you make the decision, okay, we're going to do this, and then how did that conversation go?
So the first brush with parenting we have, I don't know if you remember this, we had just bought a house in Toronto, and literally 2 months later, Aleem got an offer to move to Asia for work.
Oh my God.
You know, we were both very young, weren't expecting to do this. And so this conversation was happening. And at the same time, we were thinking, okay, we want to start moving this parenting ball forward. And I had a conversation with my aunt, who was a social worker. And I said, you know, how do we go about it? And so we kind of talked about the different options, didn't think anything more of that, went back my merry way. In 48 hours, she calls me back. She says, Kevin, I know this is the wrong timing, but in light of our conversation on Friday, I think I owe you this chat.
Oh.
I said, okay, what's up? And she had just gotten a call from a teenager who got pregnant, was considering adoption, but specifically was looking for a gay couple.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she said in all her years of social work, she had never heard of a situation like this.
Oh,
and
really?
She said, I know this is the wrong time for you guys because you're moving to Hong Kong, but I need to put it out there. So we sat with that information, we talked about it, and it was a great opportunity, but we realized we weren't ready.
Right. You know,
I was at the time 23.
Oh, yeah.
I was still finishing up school. You were at the very early stages of your career really ramping up. Could we have done it? Absolutely. But I think we would have missed out on a lot as a couple. Those first few years abroad and had just different experiences, just the two of us, which I think probably rounded us and made us better parents in the long run. Mm-hmm. So at the time we decided, you know what, this is not the right time, as tempting as it was.
God, what a hard, it's such a hard decision. Like that is like such a hard decision to make.
It was, but it was the right one. And I think we both felt very comfortable with that at the time. And then it was probably about 12 years ago, we were living in New York in the same building, funny enough. Just moved back to Toronto. We both had that parenting itch, so we got a dog.
Of course you did. So did we. Oh my God, we're like same.
Golden Retriever?
Just with different. No, actually a Frenchie, French Bulldog. But same, but different, you know.
Yeah.
So we got Carter. And after 6 months, we're like, this is great, but this is not what our end goal is. And good friends of ours had just had a baby through surrogacy. And so they had us over for brunch and basically gave us the lowdown on how they went about it. Unlike today, we were very far and few couples, you know, going down that path. So it was very unknown. We didn't know how to go about it. And so that conversation was pretty life-changing.
But I say this a lot too on the show, you know, especially, and this was, what year was this?
This would have been 2013.
That's not that long ago, but even back in 2013, that's when my daughter was born, actually. Mm-hmm. There wasn't info out there. So what we did is what I like to call gay drafting or l'Ojibwetikwa drafting. Like you do what the friends who did it before you did. Like you follow their path. And that's how we did it back then. Now there's actually books and stuff.
Yeah. Agencies, podcasts.
Exactly. But it wasn't there back then. So yeah, sorry. Okay, continue.
So we had that conversation and literally 6 weeks later, we were matched with our surrogate. Which today, you know, anybody, especially in Canada, looking for a surrogate, you're looking at months, if not years, before you're matched because there's just such a demand. I do feel we were very fortunate to have gone through the process when we did. But yeah, that was 12 years ago.
So you talked to your friends at brunch and ended up using, like, did you use an agency, use the same agency as them or?
For our daughter, we used an agency. The second for our son, we went independent.
Okay.
So they connected us with our lawyer, who today I'm on a board with, but we can talk about that later for the foundation. Mm-hmm. And their agency as well. And so through the agency, we got matched with our surrogate.
So you found your surrogate. And when did you find your egg donor?
Pretty quickly. You know, the advice we always got was you want to be as prepared as you can be. So that once you do meet somebody and that there's a match, you're ready to go.
Yeah. So I mean, it felt like eHarmony.
People say that a lot.
You have this access to this database and, you know, you don't want to be superficial. So, of course, you start with personality. But there's still 2,000 women there. So you have to narrow it down. And it got down to height and, you know, we wanted someone who has a mixed background. So it's amazing how you end up curating.
Yeah.
We did actually look for, you know, because there's testimonials, there's messages that they upload.
And pictures.
And what we're looking for is personality and the humor and how they would show up and how they would talk about their sports or what they like to do in spare time.
What was important to me when I was going through all the profiles, because I think you saw the second list, the narrowed down list already. I was really trying to look at people that felt relatable. So there were a lot of pictures that were put up that were posed or, you know, somebody trying to sell something.
The glamour shots.
Yeah, the glamour shots. And I was really looking for somebody that had kind of a background that could be similar to both of ours and somebody that came across as just very... What's the word I'm looking for? Not natural, but
authentic.
Authentic.
Like you could see the life through the photo somewhat.
Yeah.
I call this search, the donor search, I call it the search for the superhuman because it is insane, because it is crazy that we're like culling down all these things and okay, we're looking for this and really you're narrowing it down and trying to, and some of us get a little cuckoo. Like I got cuckoo. Like I ruled somebody out because he had acne as a teenager. Like, everybody has acne as a teenager. I was like, oh, no, not this one. That can't happen, you know.
Yeah.
But we do. Some of us get a little cuckoo. So if you have any cuckoo stories, feel free to share them. But you were looking for basically somebody who could somewhat match the two of you and then authenticity.
If you were a straight couple, and I mean, this is a much more efficient process. we're not going to, you know, spending 300 nights at a bar or going through Tinder, swiping, you know, you get to refine your list and you get to connect with what you feel is most valuable. And a part of it does, I mean, for me, it did feel a little bit too much like we're creating a baby in a lab.
Right.
But until we actually exchanged messages and got to learn a little bit more about their education and their ambitions, and, you know, then you feel a little bit more connected in a way. So that was important for me. We got lucky in the end. I think the entire process, at least the first time around.
It's 13 months.
13 months. And, you know, it's like snakes and ladders often because you first have to get pregnant and then you have to, like there's all, but you can go right back down to square one.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
There's an emotional component. There's a financial component. There's And by the way, life is still happening at the same time. So we were lucky in that it only took 13 months.
Yeah, some journeys. I've spoken to some couples who it's taken 5 years, 6 years, 8 years. Like, you know, you're headed towards a journey no matter how you cut it. And sometimes we're lucky and sometimes we're not. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Okay, now seems like a really good time to talk about my promo code with California Cryobank, y'all. You're going to use code QueerFam25, and that's going to get you a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. You can also use that promo code towards a discount on a level 3 subscription, which gives you even more information about the donors. And the more information we have about these amazing donors, the better. I love California Cryobank. I use them to make my family, and I think you will love them too. Just head to cryobank.com. Use code QueerFam25 and you'll get a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Make those babies and then come tell me about them.
Love is love.
It's really fascinating to me because when it comes to a sperm donor versus an egg donor, it sounds like you get more info than we did. Well, I used a sperm bank. And so it was just baby pictures, not adult pictures.
No adult pictures, okay.
Yeah, but nowadays you can pay for adult picture. You can pay the extra for the adult picture. But when I was doing it in 2012, there were none. You got to chat with your egg donor. We did not.
We didn't chat directly. Yeah. We were able to ask questions. Yeah. It was still an anonymous donation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But through the agency, we were able to just ask certain questions. And
find out more.
Yeah.
With queer family building, this is the thing that makes us slightly different from our non-queer counterparts, is there is always, there's an element of not knowing that has to come with queer family building, like in almost every single instance. And that makes it tough, but also makes it beautiful as well, because you get to decide what your own narrative is going to be surrounding that. But yeah, it's hard. It's a lot of, it's a lot of things to figure out. It's an anonymous donor, but is it like when the kids turn 18, they can contact? So same, like open donor.
Correct.
But
it has to be initiated by the kids.
And then the donor has the option to say no.
No contact. Correct.
Yeah. Another whole layer of things that we get to parent through. Yay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you narrowed it down. You found your egg donor. And it was pretty quick after that, sounds like.
Yeah, the first time around, it was. And Ava fooled us because she, you know, started sleeping all night long at 6 weeks old. And so we're like, we got this. We
you're the best parents ever.
Let's have four more. And we both actually wanted four kids.
Wow.
Then we had Noah. And I don't want this to sound like because of Noah, we don't want the other two.
But it's just that
we were actually very much satisfied, and we are a unit with four kids, two kids. I actually couldn't imagine life with four kids. I mean, my hat off to those that do.
I hear you. I really hear you. I know. And actually, our oldest was the exact opposite of what you experienced with your first. Like, it was hard. It was very hard. And the only reason we did have the second, we would not have, but I wanted to carry as well. So it was like me being selfish, and I'm glad we did it. And of course, like, but it was, we wouldn't have if there was like a choice to not, because it was tough. It's tough.
It is tough.
I didn't ask about the genetics. Did you each like take like half of the embryos and split them up like that for insemination?
Yes. Yeah.
And then when you put them into your surrogate, did you put one of each in? How did you do it? Some people do that.
They did one of each. Yeah.
Okay.
But then we never did a DNA test to know who the biological father is. It hasn't been important to us.
You've never done it still to this day?
To this day.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love that.
Depends on the day. If they're misbehaving, then I know where that comes from. But no,
exactly.
We haven't. But, you know, it's one of those things that we're going to have to go through at some point, which is they're going to want to know.
Right.
Potentially, perhaps in a moment of vulnerability, that is one of the things that bothers me. I don't know why. You know, if for example, both are Kevin, then am I going to be the odd one out? And how will I feel about that? How will they feel about that? And I'm sure it's vice versa. But this is part of the journey. And I think that talking to other families who have gone through this or are going through this, you know, we don't have as many role models out there. And that's why this is so important, what you're doing, because it tells a story that people can get hope in and confidence in.
And also just catharsis, like just to hear a story, like talking about the non-bio connection. I share a bio connection with one of my kids and not with the other. And when my wife was pregnant with our daughter, I had a hard time with it. I was really scared that I wasn't going to connect or that the baby wasn't going to like me or, you know, it all washes out in the end, as you know, but it's important that we voice these things and talk about them, because I felt so alone in my feelings. I didn't know anybody else who had had feelings like this about the non-bio connection. Like, how do I even give voice to that when these conversations are just not had, like my friends at drinks, you know?
Yeah.
So I think it is important to talk about that. And I think you offer a really unique perspective, because you're still at a place where you don't know who has which connection.
Yeah.
And to even let us know that you still feel a little of that very normal and very real fear is actually very heartwarming to hear. Thank you for sharing that, really.
And the world is still set up in a way that, for example, I'm a dual citizen. I'm Canadian and Swiss. And it's important for me that the kids get their Swiss citizenship as well.
Oh, right.
Currently, the Swiss government requires that we do a DNA test to prove that the Swiss parent is biologically related to the child, which I have. I don't think it's in the best interest of the kids. The government, the Swiss government, has no saying that we have to get this information. If the kids decide that they want to know, I'm completely on board with that. But it shouldn't be as a result of a process.
Yeah. And that's not fair for adoptive families either.
Yeah, it's exactly. I don't think it is an issue for adopted families, right? So then why is it an issue for families like ours?
Interesting.
And so that's a battle I'm trying to work through.
And it only helps everyone. If they were to fix this so that families like yours could get the dual citizenship, because you are a family, in fact, it helps other families, like adoptive families and all the things, right? So that there's no question ever. I mean, come on. That's crazy, though. But so since you don't know the DNA, you haven't done second parent adoption.
So in Canada, we don't need to do second parent adoption.
Which is great. And you're going back.
We were both on the birth certificate from the beginning. I think for Ava, we had to sign something because she was born in British Columbia.
That's right.
Whereas Noah, there were different processes, but there was no formal adoption.
Yeah. And that really holds up in Canada.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Because it doesn't completely hold up in the States. It most likely will, but you know how things are here. Got to get your everything in order. That's great. Okay. So first baby is born, and then how long did you wait to have second? Because it was such a dream.
We started the process about 6 months later. We really wanted to work with our same surrogate. She really wanted to work with us. There's a bunch of things that happened. I don't really want to go into those details, but we had to kind of find another option.
There's heartache here, because grappling with that and like having to take that loss and then move forward is another aspect of queer family building that bears discussing.
And it's a conversation that's becoming very timely, because we started talking to Ava about her egg donor, even though she wants nothing to do with the conversation.
Yeah, yeah. From what I've learned from all the people I've talked to who made babies the gay way, and it's many, many people, I think the best thing that we can do as parents is be open and honest as much as possible and normalize all families and all the ways they come, right? Mm-hmm. And just drop the seeds a lot about donors, and you know, they come this way, and there's books out there. There's so many books that you can just add to the reading routine. I'm probably telling you all things that you know, but
it's good validation. And one of the advice that we got from our psychologist was meet the children where they are, right? Mm-hmm. So don't sort of overload them. And that's actually worked so far. Mm-hmm. It'll come up in the most random moments. Like you'll be walking down Times Square or Central Park, and there'll be a question, and then you've got to then capture that moment. And sometimes, you know, we want to be together to share that moment because we want to support them. And sometimes we're alone. And so Ava wanted to know about what her background is, because she said, you know, I love Indian food so much, so I must be after yours. But then I have eyes that look like, but I like spicy food so much. And so she asked me about her, you know, the donor. And so she knows that she's part Puerto Rican. Mm-hmm. She took that in and we talked about it a little bit, but she's never mentioned it again since. Mm-hmm. You know, she did ask one day, should we go to Puerto Rico?
Yeah, why not? And I think it's also just important, like, I love what you said and her questions she had. I like spicy food, so maybe I'm from you, but I also have, I don't know what she calls you, Papa's eyes. And so maybe, right? And the beauty, we get to like, okay, yeah, because we are all a family and that's what family is. And so, yes, you are parts of both of us, regardless of your blood, which is something I think a lot of non-queer parents could learn a lot from us with things, conversations like this. You know, no, we're family. Chosen family is just, and then there's chosen family and all this stuff. But like, I have this woman, I call her Lisa the therapist. She talks a lot about donor conception and just all things that go with donor conception. And also she's very big in the adoption community. She adopted her kids. She told me really early on, like the first season, about this theory that's very prevalent in the adoption world, but not as prevalent in the donor conception world. And she calls it the drop the seed theory. Mm-hmm. So it goes along with like meeting your kids where they are. Yeah. And also just like normalizing dropping your family origin story just casually in conversation. And the idea behind this method is the kids pick up the seed when they're ready to take in that information. But it's not new to them. It's been dropped constantly. So there's never any like shock. There's never any like, what? I have a don't, you know, it's just constantly dropped. And they pick it up when they're ready.
Yeah.
And I love that. So I'm always just trying to casually drop random stuff. And my kids are like, Mom, I know I have a donor. Like, okay, Mom, enough with the donor, you know, but it's important to, and the more we talk about it, the more normal it becomes. And then they go into school and they say it and then they teach the kids at school.
Yeah.
Which is always interesting.
I've actually found with our son that a lot of questions come from him because he's being asked those questions at school.
Uh-huh.
What's been really helpful being in New York is, you know, there are a lot more families like ours. So in Noah's class, there have been two other same-sex families. And so it's much easier for him to relate, you know, because his friend Atlas, you know, also has two dads and his friend Sloan also has two dads. Mm-hmm. Whereas when we lived in Germany, for example, we were the only gays in the village.
Right. In the village.
So I think being in New York at this stage of life has also been great.
Yeah, because representation really, 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 really matters, like so much.
And not feeling like you're the odd one out.
Exactly. Yeah, it's amazing. And I just love talking about this. I could dig in even deeper, but we can move on. I want to hear about conception story with your son, because we didn't hear, you don't have to go too deep into it. But
Yeah, so we basically had to start from scratch again. It took us a while the second time around to find a surrogate. By this time, we decided that we wouldn't go down the agency route.
Yeah, why is that? I'd love to dig into that.
I think we were scarred by a couple of experiences and just felt like there were other ways for us to, you know, make contact with surrogates. And initially it was signing up on Facebook groups and different websites. And I remember for 4 months became a full-time job because I found this one site where a lot of the agencies in Canada were recruiting women from.
Oh.
And so every morning I would get up and see if there was a new profile created. And at the time, you know, Instagram and all that wasn't around. So I had a PDF about who we were, our background, and I made sure to send it to them immediately before any agency reached them in order to build contact. And, you know, I had many, many conversations with lots of women. A lot of them went nowhere.
Wow.
But we were very fortunate to, again, find an incredible surrogate. And we were very lucky with both of them. We're still in touch with them today.
Yeah.
Couldn't have had a better relationship during the pregnancy and post-pregnancy.
I love that. Talk about diligence, though. I mean, come on. Diligence and intention right there. You worked hard.
Yeah.
Hard.
We often describe it as like an M&A transaction because you gotta have your finances in order. You got to do your legal due diligence. You've got to have the right clinic set up and then the courting process. Like there's so many different, and honestly, it's hard to do that on your own without having gone through it first with the consultant.
Or, yeah. You know. Right. Because there are so many steps.
There's so many.
To make sure it's all buttoned up and legally safe.
Yeah.
Right.
And in Canada, it's still a little bit gray. It's not necessarily illegal, but it's not legal. And there are some certain provisions and around tax and around how you report it. So to do it off the bat independently is difficult unless if you've got a strong advisor.
Did you use your same lawyer that you had used for the first?
Wonderful lawyer, yeah.
So that's great. Yeah. So at least you had some ducks in a row and you could just kind of check off the boxes, which is amazing. But still so much work, so intentional. And just, I like to call that out every time I hear it because there are people out there trying to say that we shouldn't be parents. And look at how hard you worked. Look at how hard you worked to make these babies. Like, GTFOOH, as the kids don't say anymore. But like, come on, you know.
I've had this discussion a few times in public forums around, you know, there's no mistake that can happen to guys.
Well, right. No, there are no mistakes in our
community. So it's very thoughtful and planned. And you're going to want to have the baby. You're going to want to raise. And so I think that the intention is very clear. The purpose, the values, all that is discussed. And I think that that gets discounted sometimes that, you know, it's like a trend to have a baby or it's just, you know, you get out of the cute phase and you just want to dress them up. That's not, yes, I do want to dress them up. True. But yeah, there's so much more. There's so much more, right?
Yeah. And the amount of money we put into these journeys is also insane, right? Yeah. We pour our heart and blood into these journeys. So for the audacity for anybody to say that we're a trend or we just want to, you know, like get out of here. We work our butts off for this. And these babies are very, very wanted and well-deserved. And basically in a nutshell, we are better parents because we're that intentional. So you figured it all out. I had another question about your surrogacy journey.
The other two differences between the surrogacy journeys is one was a natural birth. The other one was a C-section. So it was really interesting for us to go through those two experiences as well. Our daughter was born Christmas Eve of 2014. And so we flew out to Vancouver thinking she was going to be early. We were there for 3 weeks. We've seen every street in Vancouver by the 23rd. And then I remember our surrogate called us. She's like, I think today's the day. So we went to the hospital. She wasn't ready. So then we ended up doing mall walks with her on December 23rd in Langley.
Oh my God.
You can just imagine how crazy that was.
Uh-huh.
But that feeling, well, not yet, because we still had to go home overnight.
Right.
And then it was on the 24th where she went into labor.
Oh.
But getting to experience that wait and see and not having control over the situation was an amazing experience. And then having Noah, which was a C-section and planned, and it felt like we were just going to pick up, you know, our set groceries at a certain time.
Yeah.
Like, it was a whole different experience as well. And one was not better than the other, but it was interesting being able to experience both of those.
We were there for both, like live birth though. And I didn't think I'd ever have that opportunity to be there. And you know, our Christina was just fantastic. She didn't even take an epidural. I mean, God, she was amazing. But baby came out and we were, I mean, the tears, you remember everything about it, the skin to skin. And we had that same experience with Noah, just in different circumstances coming to it.
And Carrie was just as amazing.
Yeah, Carrie was just as amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it's just beautiful and it's the stuff of life. That's life. That's what life is. And it's just beautiful and gross at the same time.
Yeah. You know, there's one we often get talked about, but sometimes there's a bad perception of surrogates that they're in this for the money.
Right.
I genuinely don't think. I mean, Carrie and Christina loved the process. They loved helping. Yes, there is some financial exchange, but it's nowhere reasonable to make an economy out of it.
Right.
So I think it's unfair sometimes that surrogates aren't given the credit that they deserve.
I agree. And I've spoken to a good number of surrogates myself. And my takeaway always is there's something special about that. Like, I could never be a surrogate. I hated pregnancy and I thought I was going to love it. But like, I could never do that. I could never, even if I wanted to, I would just would never want to. I'm sorry. I mean, would want to give you a gift, but like there's something about them. I call them unicorns. They're like unicorns. Yeah, they are. Yeah. And that's why it's really important that they are vetted, right? And that they're, you know, you do want to make sure that there is no mal intent when coming to it, because I know some people do try to do that, but surrogates, the ones who do this are unicorns.
Incredible.
They're amazing, beautiful people who are giving such an amazing gift.
Yeah.
That is everything. It's everything. So yeah. I agree. And that should be said more often too. Yeah. And the more we get to talk about these things and the more normalized it becomes, people will actually see what it is. It's crazy that it's not, hasn't made more. These stories don't make more traction in mainstream. Go figure. Okay. So you got your beautiful kids. They're 11 and
10 and 8.
10 and 8. Oh God, I was way off. 10 and 8. Mine's 11. Yeah. So life is great. And so what are you doing now? What's going on?
We're still in New York. We've been in New York for a few years. And I mean, every day is different and we learn things. I tell a story about last year when we were at this time, in fact, taking Ava to school. And Ava's very empathetic. She's very bright, picks things up. And she wasn't talking as much about the day at school. And she was a little quiet even at school. So Kevin went with Noah on his first day. I went with Ava. And at nighttime, putting her to bed, I love those moments. Those conversations are really important. And it started as I pressed her a little bit on it. And it started off with, you know that I love you, right? And you know that I'm proud of you. And Papa, I'm like, oh, gosh, something's coming down real big.
That's so scary here.
Yes. And she said, you know, I'm just tired of people asking me questions. And I don't know why that it took 9 years for me, at least me, to figure this out, but I think both of us. And I didn't get a lot of sleep that night because the epiphany was, we're used to coming out.
Yeah.
But, oh my gosh, our children have to come out every
over
day.
Over and over. Yeah.
And oh my gosh, our mothers have to come out every day. Like, I didn't realize, like, I don't know why.
Yeah.
And this really bothered me. And it's something that we've been talking a lot more about. And I think for the kids, it's becoming a little bit normal. They've created their own sort of 2-minute dialogue, depending on how much time you have, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're checking out the groceries, you've got 30 seconds, you're going to say X. Sometimes I've just said, you know, the mother died. It's just, we're just moving on. I just don't have time for this.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going to invest. You're going to invest. It's an education. It's a coaching moment.
Right.
But you become a master of telling the right story in the moment. It's a gift, but it's also a burden for children.
It's something I learned like early on when we first had our daughter. Like, you know, before you have kids, you're constantly outing yourself. Like, you know, you're in a taxi. I tell this story all the time. If you're in a taxi and the taxi driver's like, oh, you're going to meet your boyfriend. I don't need to tell him I'm not. Like, yeah, my boyfriend, he loves football, whatever, right? Like, okay, let's just get to the destination. But when my kids are there, if my kid's in the car, I started realizing, oh, I actually have to model pride here because it's actually showing her
exactly
ways to model pride as well, ways we handle this conversation. Like sometimes I make a joke, sometimes, you know, exactly what you're saying, but the more we can do it in front of them, the more tools they will have to get through it when they're dealing with it on their own. And those opportunities don't come up that often, but they do come up. And when they do come up, it is a moment where I'm like, okay, I gotta do this right. I check myself and
show
I make sure, okay.
Yeah,
show up, you know.
They're becoming, so Ava is empathetic, but Noah knows that it's annoying. So now when it happens, he'll interject really quickly. I mean, someone will say, oh, where's your mom? He'll like visibly roll his eyes. And he'll say, I have two dads.
Yeah. I love it. Right.
Like, okay. He said it. That's cool.
He shuts it down, right? There's so many ways to handle this. Yeah. And I tell my daughter, like, I'm like, you want a really good comeback? I have so many good comebacks. You want one? And she's like, Mom, stop. Like, I'm trying to get her to like hit them hard, but you know, she does it her own way. But it is, it's, the kids are constantly coming out too. And that's something, that's something that's an awakening for us when we become parents.
Yeah.
It is. It's true. I had this one time, there's this doorman that we would always pass. He was really friendly with us. And we were always walking down the street together as a family, me and my wife and my two kids. And he was so afraid. We would talk to him for a long time on the street. And one day I was walking back from somewhere with my daughter. And he's there. He's, oh, hey, where are you coming from? I said, oh, basketball. Oh, yeah, that's really good for the girls. I used to coach basketball. Oh, but you know what? You got to be careful with the basketball. Because a lot of times it turns the girls into lesbians.
Oh, no.
The thoughts that went through my brain in that my daughter is six right here. She knows what a lesbian is. And so I just blurted out, oh, that's okay, because I'm a lesbian. And she laughed, I laughed, he got awkward, started listing off all the gay people he's known in his life. And then we moved on. But like, so there are so many of those moments.
Yes, yeah. It's just not true. I used to play basketball and I'm clearly not a lesbian. So.
You're not a lesbian. I know. I never played basketball and I am a lesbian. So. Oh, God, I love that. But can you talk to me a little bit about what you do at your organization and the amazing things you're doing in the world, not just in your parenting life?
A few years ago, I was approached by our surrogacy lawyer, Michelle Flowerday. If anybody's ever looking for a great lawyer in Canada to, have your back, I would highly recommend her.
Okay,
and
good.
And she reached out, letting me know that there's a new charity starting in Canada called Fertility Friends Foundation. And she wondered if either one of us would be interested in kind of helping promote the charity towards LGBT. So I joined initially just as their board of director or part of their board of directors, and then eventually as vice chair. And it was started because two fertility doctors in Canada just kept seeing patients of their own struggling to pay for their services. And they said, you know, there's got to be a better way to do this. And there's got to be a way for us to give back.
Mm-hmm.
So they started this charity with the intent of giving grants to individuals that financially needed it in order to go through fertility treatment.
Amazing.
And it's grown with time where now not only do we give grants, but we have a partnership program with IVF clinics across Canada. So it's not just one specific clinic. It really is a cross industry venture.
Yeah.
And so if our grants go to a patient that is one of those partner clinics actually help cover the full cycle of the IVF treatment.
Oh, wow.
With some limitations, obviously, but
that's amazing.
It's been great. Our biggest challenge with the LGBT community is, unfortunately, a lot of people find out about us after they've already created their embryos. And so I'm hoping that, you know, having more conversations on a platform like this, that it will help get the word out there. So if you are a couple in Canada or you have family in Canada that are thinking about surrogacy or IVF treatment, look us up, fertilityfriendsfoundation.com. We give out grants twice a year, once in the spring, once in the fall. So our next cycle is coming up in October. I think it's been really rewarding being part of a movement like this in Canada, because there hasn't really been anything like this to an extent that is national and across many clinics.
Mm-hmm.
We'd love to be able to expand to the United States. And
I know.
But right now we started in Ontario. Now we're nationwide. And so we're hoping to keep building this.
That's awesome. This is so needed. It's so needed. And actually, we connected because somebody had asked me if I knew of anything like this in the States. And so I had posted it asking if anybody knew. And then Kevin, you reached out. And it's so needed and important. And it would help so many people, not just gay people, you know, not just the queers, but all of us, you know. So everything will be linked in the show notes for folks if they want to go check it all out. Hopefully it's able to like eventually move its way into these states that are so divided right now.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that the whole state of the world, as far as that goes, is so challenging right now, too.
I know.
depressing in some ways, but you know, you got to plow forward and do the right thing. And I do think the pendulum will eventually swing back, but it's a tough time right now.
It sure is. It sure is, especially if you're a marginalized person, right? Yeah. It's a tough time. And there's a lot of marginalized people, and it seems like that list is growing.
Yeah. There's some hope, though. I think, you know, put politics and legal aside, organizations that have held the commitment despite headwinds. Even when I used to work in Canada, it was with TD Bank Group, and very inclusive culture, and very early on had the right type of policies and benefits that would help situations, or whether you're straight or gay, you know, you were supported in the IVF.
Yeah.
Treatment. And that's the company that I'm in now, also very, very pro and supportive. So I hope that also, you know, platforms like yours help tell a story of how important an impact it has on families. Mm-hmm. And when you solve some of that worry and friction, then employees can be more focused, you know, accelerating and being optimal at their workplace. There's a clear connection.
Yeah, there really is. And I think it's also important to note that you can talk to your place of employment about the insurance benefits. And, you know, we need to be vocal and we need to speak up. I didn't even know that I could even like request help for my fertility treatments back when we were starting. Now I know so much more. But yeah, you can be vocal. You can speak up. You can say, listen, there's so many people who could benefit from if you add this to the benefits. So once again, we have to speak up for ourselves once again.
Yep.
But, you know, we're getting there. Pendulum's going to swing the right way. I adore you. I adore you too. And I'm so happy to have gotten to know you. And hopefully we can like get together over cocktails in the city and, you know, get our kids together and stuff. That would be cool. Thank you. And please keep in touch. Good luck with middle school. And this is not goodbye. This is not the end.
Sounds good.
I hope not. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Jean. My God. Anytime.
Queer Family Podcast.
A special thank you once again to California Cryobank for being a sponsor of this episode. Use code QueerFam25 for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. And tune in next week for another amazing episode of Queer Family Goodness.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier. You're going to join and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
Are you moving through adolescence with your kiddo, navigating the fear and worry that comes with this season of parenting? The Joyful Courage podcast for parents of teens is what you've been searching for. Real conversations about real challenges. Lying, screens, school, risky behavior, I cover it all. My name is Casey O'Rourke. I'm a positive discipline lead trainer and parent coach. I put shows out each week that reframe the messy terrain of the teen years and leave listeners feeling seen and hopeful. Check out Joyful Courage wherever you listen to podcasts.